started crying and couldn't get it out. And she was apologizing, which you should not have to apologize for telling someone who you are. But she was apologizing. I'm sorry to do this to our family. And I kind of had a weird inkling. Not like you would think a mom would know, but I knew there were things that I was like, oh boy.
Hi friends, welcome to Gather and Growth, a show for the leaders, thinkers, doers, and dreamers from rural communities and beyond. I'm your host, Emily Rushell. On this podcast, we defy expectations, bust through limiting beliefs, and ask the big questions to better understand this beautiful world and the people in it. This is your space to heal, grow, evolve, get curious, and build empathy bridges to truly transform from the inside out. Grab yourself an iced coffee and let's dive in. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Gather and Grow. Today, I am joined by a person I have known for a really, really long time in a conversation I have been interested and eager to have on this podcast almost since the beginning of me starting it. Lisa Brennan, gosh, I'm trying to even like go back. Like I've probably known you since I was in kindergarten. Went to school with her kids and her oldest was one of my very, very good friends throughout the high school and college years. And she has a very incredible story and perspective to offer on a conversation that I think a lot of us, especially living in the types of communities that we do, don't have a ton of access to. So I'm inviting us all into this place of curiosity and trust and just to learn what it looks like to walk in someone else's shoes. Lisa, welcome to Gather and Growth.
Thank you so much, Emily. And I have to say that I have such respect and fascination for the agriculture community that I love listening to your podcast and I feel like I've learned from it. So I'm really excited to be here.
Well, Lisa, let's just dive right in. If someone is getting to know you for the first time, tell us a little about you, your family, where you live, and what brought you into this conversation today.
I'm Lisa Brennan, and I live in Columbia, Illinois, where Emily grew up. And my husband, Mike, it was our 36th anniversary yesterday, so we've been married a long time. And then we have our son, Connor, who is 32, and that was Emily's good friend. And Emily, you were so good to him in high school. You really were. Mike is in the background saying, yes, she was so good. So Mike, you were great to him and did so much for him in high school with band and all the cool stuff you were in. And then so cool. We have our youngest is Deirdre. She's 27 and she is a transgender woman. So she came out, she's 27 now. She came out when she was 21. I had to do a lot of work as far as studying, journaling to learn to be the best mom that I could be for her. I just spent a ton of time on the internet reading, you know, about the transgender world, trying to find parents, trans kids. There's a lot more now, but there wasn't back then. Between journaling, going to counseling and learning about it, one of my friends said, you need to, well, the first thing I did was to tell our family. She wasn't out to everyone. She was out to me, my husband, Connor, and then her two best friends. And she said, and this was in January, and she said, I don't want to come out to everyone else yet. So there was a 6-month period, which actually looking back was good, before other people knew, where I could study and learn and figure out how we were going to navigate this. And so I wrote a letter to our family and friends and a guidebook just from the things that I had learned. And I had that ready. And then she came out in June on Facebook. June's Pride Month. So she came out in June and I sent that to family and friends. But what this is leading to is that guidebook, churches and schools and even a couple of hospitals asked me to come speak. And my friend, who I've been friends with forever, and he is really involved in, he's written a couple of books. He said, this needs to be a book. And I was like, nah, never wanted to be an author.
Not me.
Yeah. I'm still working full time. I'm a marketing director for a nursing home, which I really love. But I said, no, that's not me. I'm not going to do that. And then every time I saw him, he would bug the heck out of me and be like, oh, did you write your book yet? Did you write your book yet? And then finally, one day, he brought me a bunch. We went to lunch. He brought me all these books about how to write a book. And I was like, okay. So as more and more people invited me to come and speak, I thought, okay, why not? So I wrote a book. It's called The Auditorium in My Mind, Treasuring My Transgender Child. That came out in January of 2020. What I did was I just decided I'm not going to stress myself out by writing when I don't feel like it. So my kids were both not living at home anymore and my husband worked on Saturdays. So I would just write every Saturday morning, you know, get my coffee or whatever and just write. But I had so much written already from journaling. So from journaling and I would screenshot anything cool I saw on the internet about it. So it was almost written. I just had to kind of put it together and then put the guidebook in it. So that's how I came to be an advocate, is with writing the book and then getting asked to speak more and more and realizing that this is a big need. People just want to understand and people need to understand. And if not to understand, at least to be kind about it and realize that it doesn't really affect you and that people are just trying to do good and live their lives.
Mm. What I think is so interesting about this is so many women I know find their passion and what they're meant to do through life experiences. And, you know, I think if we rewind 10, 15 years from now, I imagine there's probably no part of you that's like, someday I'm going to have an Instagram platform and I'm going to write a book and I'm going to travel and I'm going to speak. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing how it happened. And then I remember the date, January 15th. I know that's weird, but I remember the exact date she told us. And she'd been home for Christmas break for about a month. As a young kid, she was just extremely kind. People say, when you look back, did you notice anything? Just a few things, like her friends would all want to play that. Remember those airsoft guns that boys were always shooting?
Oh, yeah.
And she never wanted to do that. And one of the moms told me whenever we had her over, the other kids would go out and shoot the air guns and she'd sit and read a book. She was just extra kind and always sensitive to, I think, marginalized people. She was always just sensitive to that. When she went to grade school, she knew like all the custodial staff and the lunch ladies' names, and she would stay inside at recess to help them clean. And I didn't like that. I wanted her to get outside and to socialize and be with people. But she'd always say, no, they need help. So I stay and help clean the tables. And at Christmas time, she saved up her allowance so she could buy the custodian and the lunch ladies a Christmas present. And we'd be in the dollar store anywhere and I'd see people and they'd come and go, oh, and be so excited to see her. And I would be like, who is that? And it was some of the people that worked at the school. I will say she grew up as what we thought was a boy. So I thought I had two sons. And so when you say a trans woman, that is what she is now. That's someone who has transitioned from male to female. You notice that I still say she when I talk about her in the past. That is just what works for us. And I think it's what works for her. It was too hard to tell stories and to go back and switch everything. And she always was this woman that she is now. So I just wanted to explain that because sometimes people are like, wait a minute, what did she start out as? And
I love that you're explaining that because I think, you know, when we don't know or we don't have a personal connection to someone who's been through that, we don't always understand how to talk about it or what to say. There's this whole like buzzword around pronouns and what does this mean?
Yep.
And so thank you. Anytime you feel like there's an opportunity to explain why, I think that's incredibly helpful.
Okay. It was hard at the beginning because we do talk, you know, we're a close family and done a lot of really cool things together. So we talk a lot about the past. And I will tell you, as far as names go, she changed her name. Her name is Deirdre now, and she goes by D. A lot of people, this is for education purposes, they call the name they had in the past their dead name. I was in a group called Transparent, which I'm still in. I can talk more about that too. But we don't love that term as parents because we don't, it's dead name. It just doesn't sound right. So we'll say her old name and we don't use that anymore. At the beginning, sometimes people would say, oh, and still use her old name and say, what are we, you know, what are we supposed to do? You don't use that anymore. This is who she is now. That's a name that isn't used anymore.
Can I ask from a mom's perspective, what was that like? Because obviously this is this person you've brought into the world. And, you know, I'm just thinking I'm so, you know, close to the baby stage and all the drama that you go through to pick the name and then raise this child. And like, that is who you know them to be. So what was that journey like for you as a mom?
It was hard as hell. It was because, like you said, that's how you think of them, is that baby that you named. She was so good about it. When one time we talked about it after she'd been out for a while and I was visiting her at college, and she said, Mom, she was kind to me and said, this must be so hard on you because you were the first person I ever met, you know, and I was your little boy. I hate to tell you that that wasn't, you know, that wasn't right. And it's not who I am. And she said, it's just very hard for me. And I thought that was kind of her to see my point of view. And I said, you know what? We'll get through this. You've got enough to worry about. You don't have to worry about my part of it. I will work on my part of it. And that is, again, why I was lucky with that 6 month period and that she was away in college, is I could work on that on my own. She didn't have to see it was sadness. You know, she didn't have to see the sadness. So when she came out again, back to January 15th, she'd been home for a month. And we'd had a great Christmas, but I could just tell something was a little underlying thing with her, like maybe a little sadness or a little something. Well, it turns out she wanted to tell us that whole month, made a plan. Ever since her birthday's in October, she planned to tell us on her 21st birthday. Couldn't get it out. We went away for Thanksgiving on a little trip. Couldn't get it out. So she waited until the last day of her break. And she was going to drive back. She went to Illinois State University, which is about 3 hours from us. She was getting ready to drive back. And she had on her coat, hat, gloves, and it was starting to snow. And she came out. She was acting real weird, like she was looking for something. And she's a musician. So I'm like, did she lose a chord to her, you know, guitar or keyboard or what is it? And then she came out and she had a teeny little piece of paper. And she'd written written things down, which is so sad now to think that she wanted to say to us. And she started crying and couldn't get it out. And she was apologizing, which you should not have to apologize for telling someone who you are. But she was apologizing. I'm sorry to do this to our family. And I kind of had a weird inkling, not like you would think a mom would know, but I knew there were things that I was like, oh boy. And I kind of sat down and, you know, my heart's going crazy. And she said, I'm a transgender woman. In my book, I say it was like a Stepford wife, because I was like, we love you. We support you in whatever you do. You know, saying the right thing, but being like, oh my God. Mike was great. My husband just said, well, you think you're the first transgender person in the world? And she goes, no. And he said, well, is this going to make you happy and feel good? And she goes, yeah. He goes, okay, we love you, you know, and hugged her. And so he was really great about it. And I, of course, hugged her and said, we'll support you 100%. And then she left to go on the road and I had a complete meltdown. You know, I said, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? Mike said, what do you mean? What are you going to do? We're going to love and support our kid. So it was a great thing to say, which I knew that deep down, but it was like, hey, now tell me how I'm going to get there. That was the night that I just got online and just started following anyone I needed to see successful trans people. And there are a lot of them, which I didn't know at the time. So I got online and just started following. And then I'm like, where's the moms? You know, where's the dads? There weren't. Boy, has that changed. There's so many now supporting their kids and writing books and doing great things. So I found a organization called Transparent online, and they're national. It's transparentusa.org. Should anyone out there need that? They have branches, or they have little chapters all around the country. It originated in St. Louis 10 years ago, and I found them and I was like, whoa, it's right here in St. Louis. There's a support group meeting once a month. And so I got on there and started following them. And then I found an LGBT counselor in St. Louis. And I said, hey, my kid just came out as trans. Do you think we could talk sometime? It was a Sunday night. She emailed back, which I thought was so impressive. And she said, is this for you or for your kid that came out? And I said, it's for me. Again, 7 years ago, she said that is highly unusual for parents to even want to do. So I would come for a free session on Wednesday. Again, now I have so many friends that have trans kids, and they all have gone to counseling because you needed to. So between her and between Transparent, it was a huge help. I remember the first night I went to Transparent. Well, before I went, I couldn't get that meeting soon enough. I was like, I need other parents. And I think it was a month away. And so I emailed and said, do you have anyone out there who has successfully navigated these waters that you could direct me to? And they did. They directed me to my friend Karen, who is now one of our best friends, and her husband too, and her kid had been out and also went to Illinois State, which is wild, where Deirdre went. And her kid was a trans man. He came out at 15. She helped me hugely and still does. And then when I went to the first Transparent meeting, I was looking around, not a panic attack, but I was like, okay, what am I doing here? And why are all these moms happy and talking about their kids? And, you know, it was, they'd been in it a long time. They could tell they were all friends and saying what their kids were doing. And then that first night when I told my story, we went around the table, I sobbed like a crazy person. I mean, just sobbed and sobbed to the point where I think I was dehydrated the next day because I was dizzy, and everyone just listened and they were crying too. And I felt so supported. But I remember that first night thinking, oh God, I feel so sorry for all of you guys and for me here. And by the third or fourth meeting, I was like, we're freaking awesome. This is a bunch of great parents and moms. And, you know, it just how time really does help in everything. So
time and community. That's what I hear is like, when you are in those moments of isolation and like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this? Whether it's this particular situation or anything.
Yes.
When we are navigating the unknown and when it feels like life as we know it has been pulled out underneath us, even in like, I know I can get through this. I have gratitude for this. It's going to be okay. In those moments, it is terrifying. And so I imagine just like, you know, that feeling of like, I'm not alone, and I can see representation of other people who have gotten through this and are okay. That is so important no matter what piece of life we're navigating.
That's 100% true. And I know you talk about that on your podcast, the isolating feeling. And then when you have community, and it's just, it was huge. And like I said, we all still see each other at the, if you're at a pride event and see them there, it's like family. Even the ones that I don't know that well, but just saw at meetings, you just always hug each other. One time, Connor, my son, was with me at something, and somebody just came up and hugged me, and he goes, who was that? And I go, oh, can't remember her last name. She's got a trans kid. And he's like, you parents of trans kids, you're always hugging each other. I'm like, yeah, we are.
Yeah. Well, it's that like, I see you, and I know what it's like to walk the path that you are on. And in any situation, when you feel seen and heard and understood and loved, it is so liberating and safe. It's such a good feeling.
That's it.
I would love to hear more about, okay, so you were kind of doing this work and wrestling within yourself and seeking all these resources and community. She was kind of on her path, figuring it out. And then 6 months later, it was like, okay, like we're going public now, Facebook official. Yep. What in the world was that like?
She told me she was going to post it. And I was like, oh, actually she must have been, oh, she was home for the summer. She had an internship that summer. So she was home for the summer and she told me she was going to do it. And she said, okay, I did it. I came out on Facebook and she slapped her laptop shut. And I was like, no, don't you want to see? Because I was like, anybody say anything, you know, mama bear, anyone says anything, get ready. And she's like, nah, I'm going to go for a jog. I'll look at it in a couple of days, which that is so much more control than I have still at my age now. And I was like, okay, well, I got on mine and was like, well, I'm going to see. And it was, I mean, I was just sitting there bawling because people were saying the nicest things. I mean, professors from college and pastors we'd had in the past and like Mike's sister-in-law, one of his sister-in-laws, who's sadly not with us anymore, Patty, but she said, love you, Deirdre. And that's all she put, you know, because Deirdre put her new name on there. So it was very overwhelming and just beautiful. And meanwhile, right when she posted that, I started sending out mass, you know, at least to our family and friends. My husband has nine brothers and sisters, so there's a lot. And sent it out to like my sister and cousins and uncle. And my sister-in-law was the one who responded first. She was like, I think she was 70 at the time. And she said, what can we do to make this a good experience for all of you? And I was just a wreck. I mean, just something I say in my book also is that during that time, I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect that kind of love. And I said, I feel like if I were a cartoon, there would be all these hearts, cartoon hearts coming out of the sky. And that I'm just kind of like, oh, you know, it's almost too much because it was so beautiful.
Mm. And was that what you expected? Or had you imagined worst case scenario?
Every worst case scenario, I'm like, what friends will we lose? You know, what is your family going to say about this? And then my uncle, I believe he was 82 at the time, still around, great guy. I was like, okay, you know, I don't even know if I should send it to him, but he has to know. And he sent the best one. So my parents died when I was young. And so he's my dad's brother. And he said, I'm so certain that your parents are so proud of you right now, you know, which that meant everything to me. And then he said, everyone is born to be who they are, you know, and to do what God gives them. And then he put a lot of other nice stuff. And then he put, will I ever understand this? Not really, but then I don't understand my iPhone and it comes in very handy. That's so perfect. So whenever I do a talk out or speech, I always try to stick that in there because people love that. Yeah. We were very lucky and most people are not. Hopefully that's getting better, but you know, who knows? I think a lot of it was because people knew her and knew her to be such a great kid. I was worried about the church too. And sure, there are people in the church who are still like, okay, that's, you know, kind of strange and I don't agree with it. By the way, don't say you don't agree with it because that's like saying you don't agree with someone having brown eyes or being left-handed. They can't help it. She did not want to be trans, which she said a lot at the beginning. She tried for several years not to be. So that's why when people try to be nice and they're like, well, I don't know if I agree with it, but I support it. It's like, not the best verbiage just because she did. It's not like she went out and said, I'm going to do this. But so our church, it was Pastor Bob at the time who, you know, invited me to come do. So the book came out right before COVID. So I couldn't do a book tour or anything because of COVID. But before that, it was in February, but before COVID really hit, invited me to come to called the dessert and discussion at church where I would talk about the book and they'd have, you know, church ladies, lots of desserts out.
As you do.
As you do. And I was like, and I could sell my book and sign it or whatever and just talk. And I was like, okay, you know, if you're sure you want me to do this. And he's like, yeah, I think it'd be good. So it was even in the church bulletin and the name of the book, which at the time I was still like, transgender is such a hard word. Now it's like, you know, nothing. But I went and I thought, oh, it would be so nice if I have 20 people, you know, it'd be so nice. 25 would be amazing. And it was like 75 or 100. I mean, people just poured in and everyone was just amazing. I do much better in speaking engagements when I have a loving crowd. Because as you can imagine, I do not always have a loving crowd with this particular topic. So it was just wonderful. And then I even had a Sunday school teacher come up after and say, we always knew she was just special. She always cared about people so much. And I don't know. And there was all these older church ladies too, Emily. So it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
So again, we've been luckier than most, much luckier.
I think there's also an element to, and I see this in so many different conversations. It's like, what we imagine in our mind to be the result of something is so often disjointed from what we actually face. I see so many women hold themselves back from doing something for fear of what are they going to say? What are they going to think? Well, how are they going to perceive me? Like, how am I going to exist in the world as a result of doing what I want to?
Yes.
And I think that's something we very much have to wrestle with. But so often, once you do the thing, you either realize those opinions don't matter, or you are flooded with more positive response and support than you could have ever dreamed of.
Yes.
Even just this podcast, like I remember when I released it, I felt like I was standing naked on a street corner.
It's just such
a vulnerable, intimate space compared to even just sharing online. But the number of local people who will be like, oh, I listened to this episode and it really resonated with me, or I think that I want to do this because I've watched you do that. And I'm like, that, like, it's almost like,
yeah,
so vulnerable. Yeah. But it's like, when you do what's on your heart and you are living as your authentic self, you give other people permission to do the same. And it may look like a totally different path, but your willingness to step up in vulnerability and share your story is incredible.
It does make a total difference. And the two of the things you said, one, the positive support, and two, stopping worrying about what people think. Because I obviously was, a people pleaser, which I know you have talked about too. And you can't really be a people pleaser when you have a trans kid anymore, because not everyone is going to be happy about it or whatever the word is. So I would start, you know, we had so much positive support at the beginning, but then, you know, you do read things online, which I try not to, but there's bad stuff going on out there with trans people and just the worry of that. And then I think I have to I don't even know how often, but I start to get nervous again about what people think. I guess it's old habits die hard. It'll be like, oh, because what I tried to do was, I have an Instagram. Obviously, a lot of trans people and moms follow that, but my Facebook is my friends, people I used to work with, family, and things like that. So I still purposely put a lot about Deirdre on there to make it just so people would see it, so that people would be like, okay, this isn't that weird. Look, they go in out to eat together, and she's in a band and plays drums. And
she's a person.
Person living her life. Yeah. And we went to Disney World after she first came out, which I would always tease her. Oh, you came out as trans. What are you going to do? I'm going to Disney World. but we just had the trip planned. And she, before she had really transitioned, did not present as feminine. And I'm like, I'm not missing our Disney pictures, and I'm putting them on Facebook. And I remember being like, but then I did it, and I'm so glad I did. And so it just normalizes it a little bit. And I've just had a couple of people even say, I don't even think of her as, well, Mike's sister said recently, it's like, I can't even remember how she was before. I don't think of her as that anymore. You know, she's Deirdre. And I, you know, that just means a lot to me. But I think, and I'm sure there's people out there that follow me on Facebook and are like, why does she keep posting about her? Well, people need to see it.
Right. Well, and she's your kid.
She's my kid. Like, I'm proud of her. I'm not going to be like, not posting.
I post pictures of my kids every day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So I think I have to go back and remind myself not to worry what people think periodically, because I feel myself starting to do it again at times. And then I'm like, nope, get stronger, get back to how you were, and keep making your difference.
Can you think of any specific experiences where you or her or your family have had to navigate hard conversations where people didn't understand and were not overwhelmingly supportive?
Yes. That, though, I will say our family has been so good about it that mine would have to be in a couple of my speaking events. Like I said, there's times when I do a couple of colleges, and there was one that was at a religious university, and they do start to ask questions about God. And I think I'm stronger now and I'm able to do it. But when that first started happening, I was like, it hurts a little bit. Because so my dad was a pastor at the church that you went to too, but back in a long time ago, he passed away when I was 21. And so the church is kind of, you know, I grew up in the church, and so did both my kids. Deirdre was, you know, a vacation Bible school teacher, a camp counselor, you know, very involved in the church community. And so when I go to speak, I had students ask me how I reconcile this with God. And I have something that I remember from when she first came out, she'd been out for a few months. She and I went to a gender conference in Seattle. It was just amazing. And there was a group out called it's called Gender Cool. And it's kids who are 14, 15, 16, who are trans. It's called Who We Are, Not What We Are. They are doing fantastic things. Like one sings opera. One is a great athlete. And they are focusing. The mom I met there said she made this organization to show that trans kids are, who cares, they're trans. Here's the cool stuff they're doing. Well, one of the girls spoke. She was only 14. And she said, well, I went to a religious school and they kicked me out for not being who God made me to be, but God made me trans. So I never really understood it. That's something that I shared when the person brought this up about. I'm like, this is who God made her to be, and she's following the authentic path. So when religion is brought into it, that's what it's hard for me because, you know, we have a strong faith, and she's just one of the most kind people, and her relationship with God is just fine, you know? So that's probably when it is when we would have to navigate the most is if it comes, if religion comes up.
Yeah. Well, and in sharing who she is, you are in some ways challenging what a lot of people know to be true based on the environments that they were raised in and what other people have taught on. And so it is confusing.
Yes.
To someone who you're like, wait, no. This is not what I know. This is other.
So
and
true.
Other is scary when we have never seen it before.
Yes. And I felt the same way because I never had any problem with, you know, I grew up, one of my best friends was gay. We always were cool about that. But I didn't really know the trans community very well. And I would honestly, probably if I had seen someone have been like, oh, you know, that poor kid had a rough upbringing. And that's why they're like that. And I'm like, well, she did not have, I mean, she had hugely supportive parents. And it was, so it was right around when she came out that the psychologist or psychology organizations took it off as a mental health diagnosis. It's not mental health diagnosis. It's just is. And the scientific research and everything that's been done on it is just fascinating. And it shows that gender is hardwired in your brain when you're born. But when you said that about it is, people don't know, and they don't, it's not anything that they've been brought up to them, and it's different than they've been taught. And you said something really good. It was on your episode with, I think her name's Callie, about mindset and mental health. It was just a word that I was like, I'm using that. You said something about things being outdated, just like I think you were talking about agriculture and families and certain ways of thinking. Maybe it was about going to counseling, I think, are outdated. Yeah. I'm like, that is a great word. And I'm stealing that from Emily. A lot of it is outdated. And if you sit and talk to a trans person or someone in the trans community or read, you will see that what we learned, it was wrong. The representation of trans people on television, I mean, it's just, Mike was watching Criminal Minds, an old version. It's too violent for me, so I don't watch it. Oh, but he loves it. And it was a way old version before we started learning things. And it was like, oh, definitely the culprit is murdering everyone because they are a man wearing a dress or something like that. And I was just like, and I came out, I go, turn that off. You know, but that's what back 15 years ago, if I'd have watched that, I'd have just been like, you know, that's
Oh, yeah.
That's why I follow a lot of trans people now that are just successful musicians and actors and directors. And it just, I think they're changing the world and the narrative.
Well, I think what has been so impactful for me, not that this is about me, but just seeing the way that you share and that she shares about her story and then other people that I'm connected to in life who have transitioned and are living as their authentic selves. It's just like when you humanize it.
Yeah.
When it is someone you are connected to and you have a pre-existing relationship and you walk their path and see what they're going through, it reduces that other. And that's true of whether we're talking about this or any category of anything in the world.
Yes.
The longer I live, the more I realize we are all people. And we have different points of view because of the way that we were raised and the environments that we know and the people around us. But when you bring two people together from anywhere, there is so much more common ground than we'd like to believe to be true.
That is so true. And I think there's a video out there that where they take people on totally different sides of the fence on things. And it's so cool. And one of them is a man, kind of an older man, and a transgender woman, but you can't really tell, you know, that she's trans. They sit them down. It's probably a beer commercial or something, but I don't remember. But anyway, they start talking.
Isn't it like a Heineken?
Yes.
I feel like I've seen this.
It's Heineken. And they start talking for a while and they get along about stuff. Maybe they're talking about music they like or TV shows. And then she says something about being trans. He's like, what? I didn't know that. Huh? Never met a trans person before. That's cool. And it's just like, there you go. And I also feel like what's been kind of neat is a lot of times we say, oh, the older people aren't going to like this. Like whenever we're in the trans parent support group, they're like, I haven't told my parents yet, the grandparents. Two things on that. One I found is there was a grandma that came every month to transparent. She said, well, I believe it started out as her granddaughter and now is going to be grandson. And she said, what I did was sit one night and watch videos and look at pictures of things that were my granddaughter, which I thought for hours, and I cried and cried and cried. And then the next morning, I was so excited and happy to welcome my grandson. And I was like, whoa, she's got it. And then I just did an author showcase where people come up to your table and buy your book or whatever. And an older lady came up to mine. And, you know, I always brace myself because I want to be kind if they say anything. And I'm like, okay, just be nice. And she came up and looked at it. Be cool. You don't got to get mad. And, you know, obviously the title is Treasure My Transgender Child. It's part of the title. And she came up and she just stared at that. And I was like, hi. And then she goes, yep, I treasure two of them, my kid and my grandkid. And I was like, see, preconceived. Mm-hmm. I was ready to be like, okay, move along to the next table.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's just, it catches you off guard. So as far as the older population, I'm sure it is hard. I mean, you do hear stories at Transparent of grandparents who disown, don't want to be around the kid, won't use their name, pronouns, anything. But then the flip side of that is the grandparents who just are amazing. Another author I know just wrote a book, I think it comes out in August, for grandparents of trans kids, just because she's had such a beautiful experience with her family.
Mm. I would be curious if there was anything that happened, but with everything that Connor's also been through in the last couple of years, I would, first of all, just love to hear your perspective as a mom.
Sure.
Just dive into that whole story. I don't want to give anything away. Tell us about Connor. And then I would also love to hear how or if this conversation got woven into that.
Okay, sure. So Connor was on The Bachelorette with Katie Thurston's season, for anybody out there that watches. And he went to Mexico and had to stay kind of in the middle of COVID, maybe 21.
Mm-hmm.
He had a great experience with it, made a lot of friends, loved all the guys.
He was Connor B, the cat.
The cat.
Listening.
Connor
the cat, for need to point a reference. Anyway, yes. Continue.
When he came home and told us, I said, how did you get out of the limo? Because he had ideas he told us about. In fact, even before he went, we practiced. It was so funny. We were away for like a family weekend and Deirdre had to stand and be the bachelorette waiting. And then Mike was the camera person. I forget what I was. And we practiced the whole thing. And I think he was going to do something funny when he got out of the limo. But when he got home, you can't talk to them the whole time. Their phone and laptop are taken away. And I said, what did you do? And he goes, well, I told them what I wanted to do. And they said, nah, that's dumb. And they said, or it'll take too long. And what else? He's like, I don't know. She loves her cat. I could dress as a cat. He said it as a joke. And they went and got him this cat out. And so
which was
he did it.
So perfect. Like 0% of that surprised me, knowing Connor.
Yeah. So I was like, what? You got out of the limo as a cat. I'm sure they're going to make you the butt of all the jokes. But this was interesting. He goes, maybe. He didn't know either. So we watched it the first night. Deirdre was smart. She said, maybe if there's any Bachelorette fans listening, you will get this. She said, nope, you do what the music tells you to do on this show. If the music is like, wah, wah, you're like, oh, it's a weirdo. But otherwise, you know, maybe there's some bright music. And as soon as he opened the limo door, Deirdre goes, no, they're going to give him a good edit. There, it was really bright, cheery music. And it turned out to be this beautiful scene where he comes out and meets her in this cat suit. But yes, as far as being a mom with a kid on that show, Monday nights would sometimes have not much of a drinker, but I would have a little glass of wine on Monday nights. And I had a special pillow that whenever, if he was going to kiss the girl, I would listen. And we would all, our family was watching it, and Deirdre would just always go, ew. Ew, whenever he would kiss someone. And Mike would just look at the floor. And I mean, he had a good experience. Then he went on Bachelor in Paradise, which wasn't a great experience because they wanted more drama. He's not that dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I think they tried to stir things. So, but as far as his sister, he got us all bracelets that are the trans flag before he left, like ankle bracelets. I think he put it on his Instagram or something, supporting my sister while I'm on this show. And that people really responded to that. And that was really kind of cool. And then when he got there, I believe he was going to talk to Katie, the bachelorette, on his one-on-one date he got with her, but she sent him home before. So he said he was going to, when, you know, you always talk about deep things at that one-on-one date, but she was very, they were sweet about it. It was actually a beautiful goodbye, and he got to go tell all the guys bye. So he did not get to talk about it on the show. But I will say, I have a lot of people that reached out to me on Instagram and said, we saw the post about the trans flag, and understand you have a trans daughter. And I met some really people who are my friends now. I mean, some trans people. There's a friend I have now who does a podcast it's called The Gay Podcast for Everyone. I got to be on hers, and she's just a very interesting, cool person. And then just people reaching out, and people that I still talk to now about it. And then the only thing that when he was on Bachelor in Paradise, it was David Spade was the host. He walked up and David Spade greets you and then sends you down to the beach. And so when he came up, he said that David Spade goes, what's that ankle bracelet on there? And he goes, oh, it's my sister's transgender and I'm supporting her. And David Spade goes, all right, cool. Now, and she totally changed the subject. So he said, he meant nothing mean by it, but he's like moving it along and didn't. So it never really came out on there. But a lot of people do know. And then what happened last year, I guess it's Bachelor Nation's Instagram and Facebook told Connor they wanted to interview him. They did a beautiful interview about Pride and about his sister. And I was so proud of him. And they posted it on June 1st. And they told Connor, we're watching the comments very closely so that there won't be any. So it was kind of cool because I looked at it and it was only good comments because they bring out the bad ones. But I was impressed that Bachelor Nation or whatever they call themselves did that and put that out there, because I'm sure a lot of people were not thrilled with it. But it's a really good insight into it. And there's a picture of the two of them. If you go to the Instagram page, there's all these, you know, perfect bachelors and bachelorette pictures. And then there's the two of them right in the middle of it. And I was like, that's so weird, but cool. So all in all, it was a good experience. I would never want him to do it again. Please, please don't go on reality television is what I tell him now. We're done. I hope.
I thought about you so much when that was like airing, like the amount of comments I'm sure you get everywhere around town at the grocery store, at church. Yes. Just, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And my friends would be texting me, you know, what is going on, you know, through the whole thing. So there were some fun parts of it, but I was nervous every Monday night. Yes.
What a wild, wild experience.
Yeah.
Between all of this, you know, in your advocacy work, for someone maybe who's coming into this conversation for the first time, like, what are some things that you would really love more people to understand about your daughter or this community or the experience of being trans at large?
The first one would be that, and this I had to learn too, it is we have Washington University in St. Louis. So I got to, that's where she went. And I just got to know some of those physicians there and talk to them. And one of them explained that gender identity is it's hardwired in your brain when you're born. A lot of kids know when they're younger. Deirdre said she didn't. She said around age 13, she started feeling a little sad and she didn't know why. That was puberty. And we didn't talk about trans stuff back then. So she had nothing to no representation or language. Yeah. And so the fact that it's hardwired in your brain, it's not a choice. And that most trans people fight it for quite some time and don't want to be trans. There's some very sad statistics. Close to 50% of trans youth and trans adults attempt suicide because they think, how am I supposed to live like this? Society hates me and I'm not going to find a job. All the bad things. So luckily, the bad things that I was worried about didn't happen. You know, she plays in a band and she has a job and she has a girlfriend and an apartment. That would be an important thing for me to know, is just be kind. Don't think they went out to planned to do this. And also, please know that they don't care if other people are or aren't. There's a thing out about indoctrinating the children, the last thing they want to do. They are trying to live their lives. They're not trying to make other people. This is true of the whole LGBTQ population. No one wants other people to be. They just want to live their life. And one of the things that we faced was bathroom issues. If you have a one stall bathroom anywhere where you work or live, just make it gender neutral. Why not? You know, it's only one room, because kids were so nervous to use the bathroom because they're going to be ridiculed or yelled at or beat up, whichever one they go in when they're young. They just want to go to the bathroom. They just want to pee and get out. And so many kids getting dehydrated. They wouldn't drink water during the day. And then they'd talk to the teachers, and teachers usually work to use the nurse's room or something, but they were getting dehydrated and getting super sick. And I did notice when Deirdre was at the beginning and not looking as feminine, when we flew to Seattle, I noticed she wasn't using the restroom at the airport. And now there's more gender neutral. And at the time, I couldn't find any at the time. And she kept saying, I'm fine. I don't need to drink any water. And I'm like, okay, I get why you're doing that.
Yeah.
And then when we went to Disney World, that was shortly after that, and she's still real, they get nervous and scared. It's scary for them to go to the bathroom. So be kind about it. And when we were in Disney World, she wasn't going. And I was like, you've got to use a restroom here. And I said, come on, you're coming with me in the bathroom. And she looked down, you know, walked in, didn't look up, used the stall, ran out. You know, I've been teaching her to wash her hands at the sink since she was 2 years old. And just tries to get out. And I'm like, wash your hands, wash your hands. Nobody cared. Nobody looked at her. She'd used the bathroom. She washed her hands. Everyone's so preoccupied with their kids are getting back out to Disney. Ever since then, she was cool with it. She just kept using the female restroom. And so just that's another thing to be nice to people about. They're not trying to scare you or do anything by using the restroom. They are using the one of who they feel like. So again, gender neutral restrooms supposedly are Illinois, I think, is being really good about putting everywhere. But if you have, it's your place of employment or anything, and you have the capability to just make them, just say restroom. A lot of the restrooms in St. Louis now just say restroom and you use it and it's a single stall. So
what have you learned the most about yourself over the past 10 years through this?
That I was more closed-minded than I thought, and not particularly about this, because like I said, I've always supported the gay community and the trans community. Just not once it got close to home, it made me rethink everything. All marginalized communities I started looking into and reading more about. And I made sure to get authors by Black writers. And after everything happened with George Floyd, I was like, I need to understand this more. And maybe it wasn't that I was closed-minded. I just was like, it doesn't affect me. Well, everything affects everyone. You know, everything affects all of us. So I am a much better, more well-rounded person, reading so much more by marginalized people and people that are different than us, and so much more open to things that in the past I would have been like, well, that's not true. And now I'm kind of like, wait a minute, could that be true? So that's what I've learned about myself, that I thought I was this great open-minded human when I wasn't.
That's a hard mirror to look in.
Yeah. And I don't think I did until fairly recently, when I was just like, I didn't really purposely, I'm like, okay, I'm going to read this. I'm going to try to do a little bit better. I didn't set out intentionally to become more open-minded, but all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wow, something just happened. And normally I would have been like, okay, that's not real, or that didn't. And now I'm like, I need to read about that. You know, maybe there's something to this.
I've had a few conversations recently around this and many topics. Just I see a lot of people who talk about empowering women to speak their truth and live authentically and being inclusive and you're welcome at my table.
Yeah.
Until it is people that think, believe, live, love, look different. And I think that this is just such a beautiful conversation in the work that we get to do in not taking it so personally when people who are different from us are just trying to exist on the planet.
That's exactly right. Just trying to exist. That's so true. And I think there was a book, one of the books I read at the beginning was by John Pavlovich. He's actually a United Church of Christ pastor. And it's just called Build a Bigger Table. And it is basically just about how, instead of saying there's no room here, you know, which in the past, maybe, I hope I wouldn't have done that, but who knows? But to now saying, no, there's room for all, you know, there's room for all of us to learn about each other, because everybody is carrying something hard and everybody wants to exist. They just want to live their lives.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I cannot understand in this moment today, because I've never walked in everyone else's shoes other than my own.
That's exactly
and
right.
So I appreciate you coming into this space and sharing you and your family's story, because when we lead with curiosity and love and openness to just hearing how other people experience the world, it is, in my opinion, a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it changes everything. It can only change things for the better.
Well, one thing I ask every guest on this show is, what does personal growth look like for you in this season?
It looks like that I am still learning. I thought at my age, I would know stuff, which I guess I do, but I still keep learning. And so personal growth is like, I talked to you before just about how I just am so impressed with the women you have on your show and you talking about just your self-awareness and all the things you're doing, which it took me in my 40s or 50s to get to. Now I'm just like, wow, there's still so much more to learn. It looks to me like reading and learning more about things that I don't know about.
Mm-hmm. What a beautiful gift to be a lifelong learner.
Yeah, it is.
Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story and really showing what it looks like to love your kids and use what you learn, know, and understand now to advocate and make your corner of the world a better place.
Thank you, Emily. And thanks so much for having me on here to talk about it. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. Good to see you too.
Me too. Good to see you. I know. I feel like the next time in town, we need to officially go to coffee. I feel like we've been talking about it for years, but
for sure.
I love it. Although half the time when I am in town, it's like an impulse decision of like, oh, I can walk to a coffee shop. I'm going to go right now because I can't.
I saw that on your shirt. I'm like, walk into the coffee shop.
I mean, it would take me a full day to walk to the closest coffee shop here. So it's a big deal.
That is pretty nice to be able to do.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
Have I told you today how much I appreciate you? I'd like to imagine this was a meaningful backyard patio kind of chat between friends sipping LaCroix at sunset. If you enjoyed today's show, please take a screenshot to share or forward this episode to a friend. You can also find me at Emily Rushell over on social to continue the conversation. It's truly a joy to hear what tidbits and takeaways made an impact on your day. As always, all links and resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes listed below or over at emilyrushell.com. Special thanks to my podcast manager, Jill Carr, for the time and love she puts into producing Gather and Growth for this community. What a blessing it is to be on this personal growth journey together. Forever grateful for you.